This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show with me, T. Shao Ik. HIV used to be concentrated among people who inject drugs. Today, it's being reported that sexual transmission of HIV is on the rise and that we are looking for new ways to curb the pandemic. What can we learn from the success of harm reduction in Malaysia so that we can transfer these lessons to prevent HIV among other at-risk groups? We have Azrul Mohamad Khalib, CEO of Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy, joining us for our monthly public health series. And we'll be speaking to Hariyati Jonat, Senior Executive for Sustainability HIV Financing in Transition from the Malaysian AIDS Council, and Martin Chu, General Manager of Kuala Lumpur AIDS Support Services Society, CLASS, to get a better picture of the HIV trends in Malaysia today. Azrul, maybe we start with World AIDS Day was commemorated, of course, on the 1st of December, as it is every year. What does that day mean to you?
Well, I think for many of us, World AIDS Day is one of those public events that happen to commemorate the struggle and the fight against HIV and the decades-long commitment that has been made to the people who are living with this disease. But for many of us, it's an introduction to what HIV/AIDS is all about, really. Most of the times throughout the year, we don't hear so much about it, but World AIDS Day is one of those few times when we are able to increase awareness of the public with regards to a public health concern that has been prominent and been very much in the public mind over the past three decades. And certainly when we look at it in terms of the global epidemic, certainly since the 80s.
Martin, we have a target in Malaysia of achieving zero HIV and AIDS by 2030, and that's zero new infections, zero discrimination, and zero AIDS-related deaths. That seems pretty ambitious, considering we're just over 10 years away from this target. How realistic is it to get there?
Well, it's not at all unachievable. At the moment, for the first time in the history of the HIV epidemic, we have all the tools we need to end the epidemic. We have really good and effective prevention options. We have really good treatment that can prevent the spread of HIV, as well as prolong the lives of people living with HIV so that they can have a normal lifespan and healthy normal lives. And so we have all these parts, all these tools available. The question is whether we have the political will to put it in place and whether we can have the resources allocated to it in order to make them work.
So does that mean that we are not talking about AIDS as a cause of death anymore for people with HIV?
It shouldn't be. In fact, the fact that in Malaysia, approximately 1,000 people still die every year from HIV from AIDS is quite unconscionable. Because treatment is available for free, provided by the government, people should not die in Malaysia.
Actually, Shao, this is a very good point to emphasise the numbers with regards to the epidemic in Malaysia. We have, as of around 2017, end of 2017, estimated 72,339 people living with HIV, but only 54% are actually receiving antiretroviral treatment. We basically see an annual caseload of around 3,000 new HIV cases being reported each year.
How are we doing in terms of those numbers, and considering the kind of the risk populations that we have and what we have already been putting in place? How do we rank in terms of getting these numbers down?
Unfortunately, we've been trying now to reach people who have not been tested in order to get them to test, and those who test positive to get them to treat. The barriers we're facing are mainly stigma-related barriers. So we are trying, but it's been stubborn. The numbers are persistent at 3,000 new cases a year. So we're not doing enough.
Okay. Yati, you do a lot of work with people who inject drugs, and that was the trend that we were seeing in the early days of the epidemic. In the 1990s, HIV was concentrated among people who inject drugs. And then we had the harm reduction program being implemented in 2006. And that's been largely credited for drastically reducing infections among this group, bringing the numbers of new cases down to half of what it was in 2004. Can you give us some background of what harm reduction is, and how did that, how was that effective?
Okay, it's a long story, but I'll keep it short. When the first case of HIV, we find Malaysia find the first case in 1986, mm-hmm. and along the way, they found many of people who inject drugs around Malaysia actually is living with HIV. So there's a declaration in the national Ministry of Health, where they need to combat something like that, because last time there's no proper
fight.
to stop this HIV among people who inject drugs, and that is why they pilot the needle sharing exchange program for NGOs on the ground, giving clean needles, education of safe injecting, and also referring them to methadone treatment, and yeah, again, with the ART medicines. And that is why the commitment from the government itself really helps to ensure that the infections among injecting drug users is really, really down now.
Just very quickly, the methadone maintenance, what is the objective of that? How does that work to bring down HIV infections?
In the first place of initiating of the, we don't call it methadone treatment. We call it like medical assisted therapy or treatment, because we want to reduce the stigma again. It was initiated to reduce the HIV infections, where when people are enrolled in the MAT, they will be not injecting. So when they're not injecting, it will reduce the HIV.
So these are the two pillars of the harm reduction program. And of course, they were considered very controversial strategies. But what about the use of condoms as another additional strategy among the group?
Because of that, We do have in our harm reduction services, there are like one component of services that we have to distribute this condom to people who inject drugs community. But then they were not really pushing or ensure that you have to use condom if you have HIV, or at least if you want to have sex, you can ask doctors advice when you want to have kids and all that. Yeah, sadly, the information for the condom among people who inject drugs is so low, yeah.
Actually, if I may just say, this is a very interesting point because I was there at the inception of the harm reduction program, and we saw that despite the fact that condoms were also included in the kits, but people tossed away the condoms and just used the needles. So you had a wastage of condoms where people didn't use the condoms as much. So a decision was made later on to exclude condoms from the...
To give them out separately.
Yeah. So it was not
combined
together. So it was separate and would be something that would be available.
Why
if
was
they
that
wanted.
The case?
There is one period where the study or the survey saying that they... people who inject drugs do not have sex, and unless...
In fact, I used to work with the University of Malaya with the Centre of Excellence for Research in AIDS, mm-hmm. and we did a study amongst fishermen who inject drugs. And when we interviewed them, they said that that's correct. If you put drugs and a beautiful woman together, they would choose drugs. That's what they said. And also, the libido of somebody who injects opiates changes. It lowers your libido. For some people, I'm not
for the prolonged use of opiate. Yep.
And so that could also affect how they approach sex.
It's a turn off, basically. Using
but
drugs.
Do you think that was the wrong step?
Yeah, definitely, because not everyone is the fisherman, right?
Or not everyone just use opiates.
Yeah.
I think that's the key, the concern now in Malaysia, even with medical assisted therapy, is it's specifically designed for people who use opiates.
Mm-hmm. Only.
Because there is no medical assisted therapy, for example, that has been proven long term for meth use, methamphetamine use. I think different people right now in Malaysia, different organizations are trying and researching this area, but we don't have a good program yet.
What do we know though about the changing trends in drug use in Malaysia?
Okay, this is beyond, I mean, not beyond Malaysian Suicide Council. It's just among harm reduction services. We just finished our population size estimate of people who inject drugs. And also we did a IBBS, Integrated
Biobehavioral
Survey, where there's questionnaires. They need to answer whether they are still injecting, how many drugs, what kind of drugs they are using, and we can see a clear.
What is the polydrug use proportion of that surveillance?
For me, the data is so suspicious whether it was questioned the right way or whether the community itself answers the right, give the right answers, because sometimes it's hard to confess that you're still using and talk about your sex life and also what kind of drugs. But among harm reduction in Malaysian Suicide Council, we can see a very drastic decline of people who inject drugs, where we filter each of our injecting clients now, what kind of drugs they are using, whether they are on opiate or heroin, plus other drugs. So we have that segregation data.
But, you know, when you look at the dynamics of the Malaysian epidemic today,
right?
You know, it's been almost three decades now of the epidemic, and it's now shifted from being spread through injecting drug use to now sexual transmission. We had a change, a watershed moment back in 2011, where sexual transmission began to overtake injecting drug use as the main driver of HIV infections. So now we have a situation where more than 90% of HIV infections are now the result of sexual transmission. So
that's right.
With men having sex with men, or MSM, being also the highest percentage of these cases, I think around 51%. Martin,
yes.
What happened?
Well, we forgot that HIV is also transmitted through sex. I think for 30 years, we've been developing very, very efficient programs to deal with injection drug transmission, but not sexual transmission. So, for want of a better word, it caught us off guard. We didn't invest enough in sexual prevention. We didn't invest enough in sexual awareness and HIV awareness regards to sex. And we did not invest enough in sexual transmission. So we are reaping what we sowed.
So it's not that, because there is some perception from the way we may read some of these reports, it's not that risky sex behaviours are on the rise. Is simply that the prevention strategies were not in place to capture?
Well, we don't have enough epidemiological information data to really answer that question definitively. But what we know of populations, not just in Malaysia but throughout the world, sexual behaviour doesn't change overnight, right? It's not like someday 10 years ago people started having more sex, or 5 years ago somebody started having more sex. The trends of sexual behavior are quite consistent. So what that tells us is maybe we were not detecting it earlier, right? Or maybe because now we've addressed the injection drug use concern, the sexual transmission issue is coming to the fore.
Mm.
It could be.
Okay.
But you said just now that we forgot.
We did.
Isn't that a little bit of oversight? I mean, that's 3 decades of HIV programming. Don't tell me everybody had a collective amnesia with regards to one aspect of transmission of HIV.
Well, therein lies the million-dollar question. Because in 2010 is the year where injection drug use transmission and sexual transmission achieved parity, right? They were almost the same. And therein, after that, the trend for sexual transmission increased year on year on year until where we are today. So in the past 8 years, the question is, have you seen any HIV awareness program directed towards sexual transmission? If the answer is no, then yes, we've been asleep at the wheel.
I don't think I've seen one since the 90s,
yeah.
I think, when
yeah.
you think about it. The closest one was the ABCs, which was found to be a defunct approach to HIV programming.
So that I think, is another million-dollar question. Where are these gaps in prevention strategies? And considering we've done so well with harm reduction, what can we learn from there? We'll find out when we come back from this break. I'm speaking to Azrul Mohamad Khalid, CEO of Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy, Hariyati Jonet from Malaysian AIDS Council, and Martin Chu from the Kuala Lumpur AIDS Support Services Society about HIV, what we have learned from harm reduction. We'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to the show with me, T. Shao Ik. Today on Health and Living, if you've just joined us, we're talking about the harm reduction program in HIV in Malaysia, and what lessons can we learn from there, considering that we are now looking at a sort of a hidden trend for over a few decades of sexual transmission of HIV. In the studio with me, Azrul Mohamad Khalid, the CEO of Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy, Hariyati Jonet from Malaysian AIDS Council, and Martin Chu from the Kuala Lumpur AIDS Support Services Society. Before the break, we were talking about what harm reduction is and how it has worked very effectively. But we also started to go into the question of sexual transmission, and Martin, you said that we forgot, actually. Is it possible that somebody's been asleep at the wheel, that we forgot about talking to a huge or several population groups about how to prevent HIV transmission among them? Which are the vulnerable groups exactly that we're talking about when it comes to sexual transmission? Are we talking about the general population?
Before that, can I just say that Malaysia has done really well. If we put our political will in the right place and towards harm reduction is what we did for people
yes,
who inject drugs.
Yes, and we've proven that we can.
We can beat the epidemic.
Exactly.
So the question is whether we can now shift it to
yes.
sexual transmission.
Put that right. same lens on.
Right. So sexual transmission, everybody is at risk. Every single person who has sex is at risk. The reason why they are at risk is because Malaysia has a very low consistent condom use threshold, as low as 25%, right? Possibly lower for certain groups, which means that only a quarter of people who are sexually active are consistently using condoms, which is the primary prevention method that we have. Which means three quarters. So the other way to look at it is three quarters of people who are sexually active are at risk of HIV infection.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the question is, what's the proportion of that three quarters test regularly for HIV and other sexually transmitted infections? Once you know that, you will know what is the proportion of potential hidden HIV infection reservoir within the community. And it infects most people. It's possible. I mean, most people are at risk, but we know that youth have more sex than older people, right? So it affects the youth more, and it affects the youth. So whoever has more sex, it could be heterosexual, homosexual. It doesn't really make that much of a difference because they are similarly at risk.
Why are we seeing such huge numbers though among the MSM? group, men who have sex with men?
So this particular issue, I'm not so sure whether what we're reporting is an artifact. The reason why I say so is in the last couple of years, CLAS is part of this movement and working with closely with the Malaysian AIDS Council. We've implemented a program called the Case Management Program. This program outreaches to men who have sex with men throughout Malaysia, in different parts of Malaysia. We outreach to them through various methods and encourage them to come and test. And if they test HIV positive, we will then link them into care through the Klinik Kesihatan system. With this method in place, we are seeing really a lot of people, the awareness of HIV testing amongst the MSM community has increased. So I'm not so sure whether it's because of this increased awareness and people,
more.
Yes, we're seeing this rise, or that there is a higher risk amongst MSM. We can't tell.
Okay.
The MSM community is very reliable population to actually do a lot of surveillance studies, actually, because they do come forward to get tested and through some of the outlets where you can get tested. So I presume it's much more reliable data. But if I may just look at, we're talking about sexual transmission and we're talking about prevention strategies. So let me ask you, Yati, you are from the Malaysian AIDS Council. So what are the HIV programs and strategies to prevent sexual transmission, and what are they at the national and NGO levels?
Okay, what we have, I think, started from the harm reduction program in Malaysia. We really focus on three main key population, which is people who inject drugs, sex workers, whether it's female sex workers or transgender sex workers,
and men who have sex with
men. And men who have sex with men, just recently when we piloted the case management, right? In three states, Johor, Penang and Kuala Lumpur. So the prevention that we did is condoms, clean needles, and also referring them to STI testing, HIV testing and treatment adherence. We gave pamphlets, educations about HIV infections and all that. It's throughout Malaysia, actually, up to Sabah and Sarawak.
Let's talk a little bit about condoms. Malaysia's contraceptive prevalence rate, which is the use of contraceptive methods to prevent pregnancy, is around 55%. The use of modern methods, which includes condoms, is around 33%. Mm. So when we look at it, right, Malaysia is the world's largest condom manufacturer. We're very proud of it. We supply condoms for almost every country in the world.
We were a rubber producing economy.
Exactly. Any discussion regarding sex and safer sex in Malaysia, despite what you've just said,
and the irony,
we don't seem to have any public health promotion campaigns focusing on sexual transmission. Martin, why is that? Or do you even agree with that statement to begin with?
Yes, definitely. I think that's the irony, right? We are producing condoms. We are shipping it out to the world. We are making condom use sexy. In fact, that's what we're known for. But in our home turf, on the ground, it's not sexy. You know, it's not being promoted. It's not being sold as In relation to sexual health. We don't promote sexual health. Let's not talk about HIV on its own.
Yeah.
But sexual health is required in any society. And in Malaysia, it's very, very weak.
So if I may add to that, we criminalized people last time when we implement condom distribution. People, the sex workers carrying condoms were criminalized. They were sent to lockups and
I think you're meaning that when a raid happens and then they get caught, condoms are used as evidence to prove that there was some sort of funky thing going on in that room, right?
Yeah.
That's what you're basically
saying.
Yeah,
that's what I'm trying to say.
So the condoms itself wasn't criminalized, but it's used as evidence.
Yeah.
Yes. I think it still happens today, though not as widespread, but maybe not in urban areas, but it's still being... It's used as a synonym for vice, and that's the problem.
But, you know, in the same way, injecting drug use was seen as a vice as well. And the idea of giving clean needles to people was surely such a shock to some. So why can't we have the same force to drive through distribution of condoms?
So the issue is not the distribution of condoms. We distribute tens and thousands and thousands of condoms.
And millions even.
Every year. The question is whether people are using it. Mm. So we don't... From what we see from the people who are presenting in hospitals with STIs and HIV, we know that condom use is not as high as it could be. So the question is, how do we promote condom use? How do we promote awareness regarding sexual health?
How do you do it at class? Well, and I'll come to MEC in a while as well.
We talk to people. We completely destigmatize and normalize sexual health. So we talk to people about sex. We talk to people about drug use during sex. We talk about screening. And no matter who comes to us, we don't judge. If they've had unprotected sex, if they're HIV positive and they've had unprotected sex and they're untreated, which means that they've put somebody else at risk. I mean, I think as a society, if we want to encourage people to come, we cannot judge them. So we practice a non-discriminatory policy. So that's how we start. We are also working with different community groups around the Klang Valley to promote sexual health. Groups that are targeted towards younger people, younger generation, because we find that they have a different view on sex from what I consider old fogies like me. I think in order to reach the younger generation, you need to work with them. You can't preach to them. I think the difficulty is we're very used to a top-down approach, and it requires from a grassroots-up approach. And so changing that approach is key.
What about for Malaysian AIDS Council? How are you getting past that? Or trying to get past that psychological barrier, you know? Here are the tools, but, you know, how do you help people to use them?
Yeah, what we do, we distribute condoms to... We distribute condoms to our sub-recipients where we disperse money from Ministry of Health or Global Fund and other funders. In that component, there's condom, which means we don't really give the condom. Just we have trainings. We have how to give how to use condom even. And it, at any event such as World AIDS Day and all that in the public, we try to take away all the taboos, misbelief about the condom use and all that. We try to make it catchy and happy, but we were not there during the sex intercourse, so we can just only promote. But the right or whether they use or not, it goes to the person itself. Yeah.
Well, you know, we hear a lot of strategies. We hear programs being presented. How do we know they work? Is the absence of new cases a sign of success?
How do you know what works?
These prevention programs. We were talking about sexual transmission. Yati just said it herself. We're not in the room with the person when they're having sex.
Yeah, definitely.
So how do we know
that
people are actually using condoms and preventing transmission?
Okay. So the question is, how early do we promote condom use? Mm. Do we promote condom use early enough in the formative stages of somebody coming into their sexual awareness?
Yeah. When is that?
In their teens, early teens sometimes. If you start early and you provide this as a method early enough, the question is, after if you promote it very late, changing behavior is the hardest thing in the world. We've known that. Around the world. Now, if you look at certain countries who have actually very successfully promoted condom use and you find out how it's done, you will see that they start very early. And it's not just one program, it's completely integrated, the whole country has to do it. So there's no other way.
So then what we're talking about is it can't be just community groups working in HIV who are trying to promote sexual health education. It's got to be so much more than that. We're talking about a whole group of other stakeholders.
Right. So what we do now, our current trajectory is, our strategy, we are now reaching out to community groups outside of HIV. That are not involved in HIV because we know from the trends that people working in HIV, ourselves included, are not enough a solution, right? If we were, we would have addressed the epidemic by now, 8 years after the sexual epidemic started. So we are reaching out beyond our traditional comfort zones, as it were, and finding and encouraging and engaging them and figuring out how to mobilize and motivate people to look after their sexual health.
So who are these groups?
Mainly for us at the moment, LGBT groups. They're not formal groups, but LGBT networks within the Klang Valley.
What about more formal stakeholders, more structured ones as well? Because I'm really trying to think about sexual education in schools. I'm trying to think about families, workplaces as well. Are we making any headway in engaging with these stakeholders?
Let me share my observation and also my experience. When we talk about specific stakeholders like school that we need sex education, I don't see any progress yet. But when we try to look into how we reduce the HIV among people who inject drugs through harm reductions, which it's a national emergency, where there's political will among the ministries, even not just agencies. It's at the ministry level where they really want to address this epidemic. So when we talk about political will, there will be engagement or consultations with other agencies, which is...
I think what you're trying to say is it's not just the Ministry of Health.
Yeah, yeah.
So within the HIV sector in the Ministry of Health, and kudos to them, they have gone really quite progressively...
A lot. I mean, they did
very
a lot,
far
yeah.
in providing the testing and treatment available for free to all Malaysians. The question now is, if you're going to go into schools, you have to work with the Ministry of Education. If you want to go into the workplace, you have to work with the Ministry of Human Resources. Mm. So
it has to be...
And credit due to the Malaysian AIDS Foundation, they are now working on a workplace policy for people living with HIV to end discrimination against HIV in the workplace. And we're making really good headway. CLASS is working on that as well. At some point, HIV in the workplace the regulation will be in place to prevent discrimination, which is great. So the question is, can we start HIV awareness early enough in the life course of people in Malaysia? That's the question today.
That's probably the 50 million ringgit question, but...
50 billion.
But, you know, the Ministry of Health's AIDS STD section has been one of the most progressive sectors, in my opinion at least, in the government mechanism. And certainly there's a lot to be learned from in how Malaysia has responded to the HIV epidemic and being able to apply that for other diseases. And certainly when we look at non-communicable diseases, even the inclusion of multi-sectoral stakeholders is very important to have.
Yes.
So this year's World AIDS Day theme was Know Your Status.
Get treated.
Yeti, what does this mean? And how does this help in both prevention and treatment of HIV? Knowing your status.
Knowing my status. Did you know your status? Well, not everyone know their own status. What status that you're looking for? What status actually do you mean? So the general populations needs to know about this. Infections among sexual transmission is on the rise. That's why we try to promote not in a very discriminative way. Just do testing, and if you are like diagnosed with HIV, go for treatment. Not just HIV, it has to be other diseases also, like hepatitis C, TB, you know that. I mean, we try to promote knowing your status is better than
not knowing,
and you spread the disease to others.
But Malaysia does a lot of screening. I mean, let's face it, when we look at the budget for testing of different diseases, Malaysia puts a lot of money into screening.
I was just going to say as well, we like the idea of screening for cancer and heart disease and all this, but when it comes to HIV, that there's a huge gap there. It's almost like we're looking at two different people.
Most importantly, I think here we need to address is how do you link people once they know their status to treatment? Because we just said it at the very beginning just now, only half of people getting antiretroviral treatment. How do we link people with treatment?
The issue with HIV in particular, in comparison to most other diseases, is the stigma, right? The minute you're diagnosed with HIV, the issue of know your status is HIV status largely. The minute you find that you're diagnosed with HIV, something snaps. And what snaps is you become very afraid. Mm-hmm. What are you afraid of? You're afraid of other people knowing that you have HIV. Yeah. Why are you afraid? You're afraid that they will ostracize you. You're afraid that they will call you names. You're afraid that you will lose your job. You'll be cast out from your family. Mm-hmm. That you lose everything.
It's a death penalty?
They're afraid of death too. And in fact, that's largely an existential question. But the issue is, the reason why this fear is real is because we have stories of these cases happening, right? People losing their jobs, companies asking people to leave the minute they're diagnosed HIV positive and they find out, families disown people, and so on. So these stories are not really urban myths per se, but they have tangible grounded in reality.
The fear
right?
is rooted in truth. Yeah.
So if in order for us to promote know your status is again unconscionable, if we do not at the same time have a strategy, a very good one, in order to create an enabling environment for people to come out and test. Mm-hmm. It's no point asking people to know their status and then leaving them high and dry in a society that does not accept them. Mm-hmm. Because that way, you're asking them to lose their lives, not in death necessarily, but social life.
Yeah, of course.
Right? Mm-hmm. Especially in today with interconnectivity of social networking.
Well, the one bright light, if we can call it that, is that if we can get those who are screened positive and link them up with treatment is extremely effective.
Yes.
And treatment is a way to prevent them from transmitting as well. So I'm going to go for a very quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more about how treatment can be really effective. I'm speaking to Azrul Mohamad Khalid, Galen Center for Health and Social Policy, Hariyati Jonet from the Malaysian AIDS Council, and Martin Chu from CLASS about HIV going from harm reduction to preventing sexual transmission. We'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to the show with me, T. Xiao Yik. In our public health segment today, this is our 13th episode of the public health series for the year. We are looking at HIV, of course, in conjunction with World AIDS Day that happened on 1st of December. In the studio with me, Azrul Mohamad Khalid, the CEO of Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy, Hariyati Jonet from Malaysian AIDS Council, and Martin Chu from the Kuala Lumpur AIDS Support Services Society. And before the break, we took a good hard look at why condom use is so low and why we've been facing this huge barrier in getting people to understand the importance of preventing sexual transmission. And we talked also about knowing your status. Knowing your HIV status can then open that door for you to get treatment.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit, Martin, about the role of treatment and how central it really is to then preventing further transmission?
Treatment is incredible. We've achieved so much in medical science in the last 30 years that today treatment is so effective. There's something called U equals U. U stands for undetectable viral load equals untransmittable, which means that if you achieve undetectable viral load, say you're HIV positive and you get on treatment and you achieve undetectable viral load, you will not transmit the virus to anyone else, even with unprotected condomless sex.
What about with injecting drug use?
So studies are finding that it also has an effect, a positive effect, with people who inject drugs.
Okay. Yeah,
it has a protective effect.
And treatment is subsidized by the government?
Treatment is free. First-line treatment is free, provided to all Malaysians by the government.
Before the break, we also talked about how only 54% of people living with HIV are receiving the treatment. So what's the gap there?
Well, we're finding, I can't talk about the national gap, but what we're finding with our clients is a lot of people are testing and then not coming for treatment. So they find that they're HIV positive and they become terrified of other people finding out and other reasons, that they wait for as long as they can before they start treatment. A lot of them appear at our hospitals with advanced AIDS. And in this day and age, it's totally unnecessary. The problem with AIDS is the moment the body does develop AIDS, it's very complicated to treat, and it increases the chances of long-term side effects and even death. And it's completely unnecessary.
Yati, what is your observation from your work with Malaysian AIDS Council as to why? Because we know that compliance with treatment is also an issue once people do start treatment. Taking it strictly according to the regimen is also a challenge for them. Do you know why people face those difficulties?
We can see that HIV among people who inject drugs are very high last time, right? But for them to enter the services and to get the free treatment, there are cases where they're already on treatment, but then they were sentenced to prison and also rehab centres, and that makes the treatment stop. And when they were out from the prison, they have to start the second line where they need to pay and where they can get the money. So that is one of the cases that I know.
In the HIV world, we are starting to hear terms like PrEP, PEP, and all of this being utilised in reducing sexual transmission of HIV. What are they? What do they mean? And is this form of prevention available in Malaysia, Martin?
It is very effective. It's called PrEP, means stands for pre-exposure prophylaxis. It means that before you are infected or before you have encountered risk for HIV infection, you take a pill. The pill is a part of an HIV medication regimen. It's not the whole regimen, but part of it. And it's effective enough to prevent HIV infection by up to 97-98% if adhered to. And frankly, it is better than condoms. It is more effective in terms of protection. What the WHO recommends is combination HIV prevention, which this means that you look at your HIV risk profile and you pick the kind of prevention method in order to increase your chances of preventing HIV. PrEP is available in Malaysia as a demonstration project currently, and there are plans to roll it out more widely.
I would imagine there will be some resistance to the idea of giving PrEP to certain groups of people simply because it could be seen as condoning risky behaviours. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, we can go down that route of looking at things moralistically, and a lot of people do that. But look at it objectively, would you prefer that somebody becomes HIV positive and then you spend the rest of their lives treating them
in the national health system, right? Treat them, yeah.
Which is very costly. Or would you prefer to prevent HIV and then talk about this moralistic issue separately? I think that would be the question to ask.
We're running out of time. I'm just going to pose one question to each of you. Despite being successful in halving our annual cases since its peak in 2004, what do we need to do to continue being vigilant? And how do we go about reducing these numbers even further to reach our target for 2030, which is zero deaths, zero new cases, zero discrimination? Martin?
We have to remember that there are three epidemics altogether, right? There's HIV, there's AIDS, and there's HIV and AIDS-related stigma. We need strategies and programs for all three. You cannot look at it separately. The minute you look at it separately, you address one, the other would compound the issue. So if the current concern that we have is that our programs and our strategies are not integrated mm-hmm. and they're not implemented all at the same time. We are looking at different populations, we're targeting, but we are not integrating. We need to integrate.
Okay, integration. Yati?
Echo to Martin's comment just now. It's simple as education. Stigma comes from fear. Why fear? Because of lack of information. So if we put it in a very strong way, this education, I'm sure we can address these issues timely.
Azrul?
The World Health Organization recently recognized Malaysia as having virtually eliminated mother-to-child transmission of HIV. We are on the way towards drastically reducing and maintaining that reduction of injecting drug use related transmission. It shows that when we put our minds and resources mm-hmm. to it, we can address these problems in an effective way. The problem with sexual transmission is that we are in continued denial with regards to the issue of sex. And because we are not willing to commit resources to it, and most importantly, the political will to do something about it, we will continue to see those 3,000 cases each year as a result of it. I do hope that the decision makers listening will want to engage and change that status quo.
Thank you very much. I've been speaking to Azrul Mohamad Khalid from the Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy, Hariati Jonet from Malaysian AIDS Council, and Martin Chu from Kuala Lumpur AIDS Support Services Society on our public health series, where we've been talking about learning from harm reduction in HIV. You're listening to Health and Living on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.